Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening live to another edition of ATL Prime Sports. Todd Corder here in Atlanta. JJ is out today. Mark Mancini's with me from Los Angeles, helped producing the show and co-hosting. And Wayne is out too from Memphis. So each of these guys are on vacation. They will join us next week. Big-time guest for us today, Clayton Truter, talks about his new book, Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta, and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports. You can get a hold of Clayton Truter at C-L-A-Y-T-O-N, Truter, T-R-U-T-O-R. You can go on Amazon and get his book. You can also get a hold of all of us on social media at ATL Prime Sports on Twitter, at myself, Corder Todd, at Mark at Mancini Sports, JJ, get you one, and Wayne, RWY Jr. Let's bring on our guest, Clayton Truter. Clayton, let's talk about your book, Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports. Welcome to ATL Prime Sports, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about my upcoming book.
Well, you've written several of them, and towards the end of the show, we'll go into some of those also. You know, this is an interesting book. You sent me a clip of it yesterday when we had a chance to talk off air, and you know, you talked about Atlanta businessman Tom Cousins. You know, they started the expansion Atlanta Flames, and, you know, they were having a what to do to try to figure out what to name the NHL franchise. They settled for the Flames. Of course, you know, Atlanta, it was the city's fourth major professional franchise. You know, in a seven-year period, 65 to 72, during which Atlanta finally became a quote-unquote major league city with the arrival of the Braves, the Falcons, and, of course, the Hawks. The Hawks came from St. Louis. The Falcons, they were a true expansion franchise, and the Braves obviously came from Milwaukee. So this was a big deal for this big southern town in the southeast, because at the time, this was the only major pro sports city in the southeast at that time. And now today, of course, it's expanded way out with Nashville and Charlotte and Tampa and Miami and et cetera. Well, Miami had the Dolphins, so they were a professional sports town. But Tampa, Orlando, I mean, we can go on, Jacksonville. So that's kind of how your book talks about it. You know, starts talking about Atlanta becoming a sports town. And before we get into that, how did you come up with the name Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports? Because I remember when I first moved here, New Year's Eve of 1990, my wife and I moved in our first apartment together. You know, it wasn't shortly after that, probably in the spring, you know, before the Braves season started, Mark Bradley had an article, and he still writes for the AJC today, believe it or not, 31 years later. He had it right on the title of the sports section, Atlanta Loserville, 30 years later, and then you come up with this. Tell me how you came up with the title.
As I researched the topic, I came across Louis Grizzard, who was the editor for a time at the Atlanta Constitution. And in July 1975, all of the city's teams were really in full struggling mode. And he wrote a two-part series called Loserville, detailing the struggles of pro sports during Atlanta's first 10 years as a major league city. So I'm adopting the title from that. I mean, the title is really meant to evoke a particular time in the city's sporting history, when all those teams were struggling and things didn't turn out quite as they anticipated, when the city brought all these teams in so quickly. I mean, certainly there have been some struggles since then with the teams, but it's more meant to evoke that particular time than it is the present, because in many ways Atlanta's teams, the Braves have certainly been among the most consistently successful franchises in sports. The Falcons have had their up times. The Hawks, obviously, right now are very successful. It's in many ways the story of what it was like for Atlanta in its early years as a pro sports city. and Atlanta in many ways serving as a model for other cities that wanted to become major league as well. All those cities across the southeast you just listed essentially imitated Atlanta's approach to it. Atlanta went out almost like they were trying to lure corporate investment of a normal business the way they went out to get pro sports. They lured pro sports to Atlanta by offering them generous stadium deals, and that's what helped make Atlanta major league.
You know, you mentioned Louis Grizzard, a fantastic writer for the AJC, the late Louis Grizzard. You know, Mark Bradley came up with that title too. So that, you know, I remember Mark, but I didn't remember, you know, Louis Grizzard doing it. But he did it also, and I'm sure I just misplaced that. Thank you for remembering that. You know, tell me why did you write this book?
Well, it started out as my doctoral dissertation when I was in graduate school. I was very interested in the historical phenomenon of cities acquiring pro sports teams either through league expansions or through franchise relocations. And I wanted to pick a city to write about and learn about that exemplified the changes that took place in pro sports in the second half of the 20th century. And there's no better example of it than Atlanta. Atlanta went from having no pro sports whatsoever to being one of the elite pro sports towns in the country. They were only the ninth city in North America to have teams from all four of the major professional sports leagues, so it seemed like the natural place to study. So I've spent the past decade reading and writing and researching Atlanta and eventually taking what was my dissertation a few years ago and turning it into a more entertaining kind of piece of writing as a book.
You know, Clayton, when you sent me part of that on yesterday, I'm a huge NHL fan, and we've had two franchises here in Atlanta. Like I stated earlier in the show, we had the Flames, who were actually pretty darn successful for a while there, and we had the Thrashers, who were not very successful at all, and I think a lot of that was due to ownership and where they put the arena. They put the arena downtown, and you know, this could be a good hockey town if they would have put the arena. They can't do it now, but if they would have put it off 400, heading north, it would have been on the left side of the freeway. Heading south would have been right. Up there in Alpharetta, I think the franchise would still be here today. Maybe I'm wrong, and I don't know the super particulars about it. But putting it in downtown was not where the hockey crowd wanted to go. Now, of course, where the Hawks are, you know, that's perfectly fine. And, you know, it's a fit. And the Braves were downtown, as you know, in Fulton County Stadium for a long time. And then they were downtown in Turner Field. And they left Turner Field for a sweet deal, did Liberty Media, out in Cobb County on the corner of 285 and 75, which is really a nice area. There's a lot of hotels, bars, restaurants, and shops. And, you know, it's real tough for someone on the south side of Atlanta to get there. Easy from the north side, easy from the west side, and difficult from the east side. So, you know, going back to the hockey part of it, tell me why you, you know, focused in on the Flames and Thrashers. And what's that all about?
Well, in particular, I mean, the focus is particularly on the Flames in the book, and in many ways I defend the experience of the Flames in Atlanta, particularly people who are not that familiar with Georgia, not that familiar with the actual Flames experience. From a distance, they look at it and they think, the Flames were terrible, they were a failure, nobody cared. It couldn't be further from the truth. For a number of years, the Flames had fantastic local support, particularly as a live event. That, in many ways, was their trouble. They had a very enthusiastic live fan base that existed. They had a little bit of trouble developing it on TV because they didn't have a very good TV deal. The Flames were successful on the ice. They made the playoffs in six of their eight seasons. They had one losing year in their time in Atlanta, a year when they actually made the playoffs. And for a number of years, they were above average in the league in attendance. The reason the Flames ended up leaving town had more to do with some of the financial issues their owner, Tom Cousins, was going through at the time with his real estate empire than it did with the team's actual success. There were a lot of moving parts in the Cousins operation as they were trying to redevelop parts of downtown, run the Hawks, run the Omni, run the Flames. I think in many cases the issues Atlanta faced, whether it was with the Hawks or other teams during the 60s and 70s, was a matter of people biting off more than they could chew. And I think also people underestimate how difficult it is to run a sports franchise. It's a very particular kind of business with a lot of insider knowledge built into it. There are many people who've been successful in every other business they've gotten into, Tom Cousins included, who, you know, basketball didn't exactly work out for him and neither did hockey, even though he's been very successful in everything else he's done. And a lot of owners in other cities have found the same thing. It's not just a matter of Atlanta being like this. In many ways, Atlanta provides the model for other cities in the Southeast and across the South in general and the American West for how to become a major league city. But owners in other places who were very successful people, had done well in every other business, struggled in pro sports. It's a very specific and particular business, as some of the owners in Atlanta found, whether it was the Smith family with the Falcons, the consortium that owned the Braves before Ted Turner. Even Ted Turner himself in his early years found what a difficult business it was. It proved a lot more difficult than it looked from the outside to succeed owning a pro sports franchise.
I will state one part of the book, if you don't mind, Clayton.
Sure.
You know, what? And less than an hour before the 8 p.m. faceoff for the Flames' first game, you know, laborers were still bolting in seats at the game's venue, which was the brand-new Omni Coliseum. And, in fact, the game was the first event held at the Omni. And, you know, it was the brainchild of Tom Cousins, who, you know, brought hockey to Atlanta. I just thought that part of the book really stuck out to me. An hour before face-off, they were still putting in seats. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, this was all very new to them. I mean, they really built both the Omni and Atlanta Fulton County Stadium incredibly quickly. Some of the issues they ended up facing in both buildings were a product of the zeal with which they engaged in building them, trying to get them done so quickly. Atlanta Fulton County Stadium, originally just called Atlanta Stadium, was built in 51 weeks. There'd never been a stadium of that size and scale built so quickly. And as a result, it deteriorated fairly quickly because it wasn't maybe done with the care that some other stadiums that took 2 or 3 years to build were done. It was also the city maintaining it as opposed to a private entity, and there were some question marks, too, about how good of a job they did maintaining that facility. So Atlanta was in a rush to become Major League, and some of the issues the teams faced were a result of how enthusiastic the ownership and then many people locally were to get these major professional sports franchises. This is all, you know,
I'm sorry, I was going to say our guest today is Clayton Truter talking about his new book, Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports. You can get it on Amazon and other ways to get the book. Clayton, tell me, let's shift over from hockey over to basketball, because we know the franchise eventually went to Calgary. And, of course, the Thrashers, their time here was, what, 11, 12 years, and they eventually went to Winnipeg. Let's talk about the Atlanta Braves. And you mentioned Ted Turner earlier. You know, this is a franchise that TBS helped build. You could watch. I was watching the Braves working a job when I graduated from high school in the state of Michigan in summer of '83. I went out to Juneau, Alaska, and worked the summer, and I could listen to the Braves on TBS. Atlanta has a major, major fan base, probably the top seven in Major League Baseball, thanks to Ted Turner and TBS. That is remarkable, and talk about that transformation from, you know, when the Braves struggled, and then all of a sudden where they are today. They've had a really good 30-year run. They've won several division titles. They won a World Series. They were in the World Series 5 times in the 90s. They have a fantastic venue today at Truist Park, a great area that it's in. Talk about the Braves franchise, which to me is the model of all Atlanta professional sports.
Well, I would argue that in a broader sense, Ted Turner is who saves pro sports for Atlanta. The Hawks were looking like they might move out of town. After Maravich gets traded, the team is very weak. The attendance is incredibly poor. They're last in the league in attendance a couple times in the mid-70s. Turner buys the Hawks. Turner buys the Braves. essentially on the installment plan in both instances. The owners want to get those properties off their hands because they're losing money on them, and Turner ends up using them as programming for his television empire and building a national fan base for these teams. It certainly didn't happen overnight. The Hawks continued to struggle for a while. The Braves struggled for many, many years, for probably close to 15 years after Turner bought the team. The team struggled on the field. Eventually, he ends up turning the operation over to baseball experts and building a consistent winner. In many ways, the further that Turner got away from the day-to-day operation of both the Hawks and the Braves, the more the franchise prospered. I think what Ted brought as much as anything was a sense of enthusiasm to the product that wasn't really there. The ownership, it seemed, with the Braves was essentially an absentee ownership consortium based in Chicago. And the Flames and Hawks that had, you know, Cousins who was involved with a million different things. So Turner became a face for the franchises, which helped them weather the difficult storms they faced during the 70s and 80s.
You're listening to Clayton Truter here, author of the book Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports, here on ATL Prime Sports. Todd Quarter here in Atlanta, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. Clayton, we can shift over to the Falcons. We had about 14 minutes left in the show. This is a franchise, historically, it has a losing record. It was one of the few, you know, was an expansion franchise. The Smiths owned the franchise for quite some time before Arthur Blank took it over, and you know, the Smiths did really well towards the end. They had a really, you know, they had some good years in the 80s under Lehman Bennett, and then, of course, Dan Reeves came in and changed the culture of this franchise immediately, and they went to a Super Bowl, which is one of the most remarkable seasons in Atlanta sports history, along with the Braves season in 1991. Talk about how that franchise has developed from its beginning and to where it is today. To me, it's doing really well. It has a brand new world-class facility in downtown. You know, this is a unbelievable transformation that this franchise has gone through. They have a star quarterback with Matt Ryan. Of course, you know, they traded Julio Jones because of financial issues with the team and trying to get it under the cap and rebuilding the team. Talk about that transition for the Falcons.
I think the biggest issue the Falcons faced, especially in their early years, was some of the how they ended up being placed. They are an expansion team in the NFL in the middle of the NFL-AFL war. The talent base is very depleted because many good players are playing in the NFL. So if you're an expansion team in the NFL, you're probably never going to have a weaker possible roster than you would at the exact moment that the Falcons were an expansion franchise. There were just fewer good players available at that particular moment because the AFL had poached so many good players than an expansion team would ever face. Additionally, getting eventually placed in the NFC West put them in a very difficult travel situation. They had to travel virtually more than any other team in the league as a result, in spite of some of the weaknesses they had with some of the management in terms of the day-to-day personnel stuff was fairly weak in the 60s and 70s. There are certainly question marks about some of their early coaching and managerial decisions, but they just, in the context of the AFL-NFL war, and also the division they got placed in, put them in a very difficult situation. My impression from the players I've talked to is that they liked the Smiths, that they got along with them well. I think also the stadium situation was a little bit bad. Atlanta Fulton County Stadium was a tough venue for football, whether it was in terms of drainage or in terms of having relatively few seats that were close to the action. So I think once the Falcons move into the Georgia Dome, once they get that deal in place, they can carve their own identity a little bit more and became a more successful franchise. And as you said, the Smiths seems to grow into the role, and by the time they ended up selling the team, the Falcons had a strong base of local support, something that has certainly continued and expanded under Arthur Blank. So I think over time the Falcons leadership became a more veteran in terms of understanding how to manage an NFL club, and the Blank operation has been incredibly successful at continuing on that success.
You know, Clayton, before going over to the Hawks, it's professional sports, it was a tough sell back then. It was an extremely tough sell back then. College football, as you know, and college sports is king in the Southeast. You have the Southeastern Conference, which is the best conference for college sports in any conference, especially in college football, without a doubt. There's the national championships that they've won, and people, all folks, all parts of the country come down here to try to recruit these kids out of Georgia, Florida, and et cetera. So, you know, professional sports was a tough sell, and I still think it's a tough sell today because, you know, it's not like a Pittsburgh where it's a great pro football market. It's not like St. Louis where it's a great baseball market, or New York, which is all a professional sports market, and Boston, too, and they have a tremendous amount of history. So you have transplants that come down here. They're not going to root for the Atlanta team. They're going to root for where they came from. So, just like when I would go down and watch the Red Wings play the Thrashers, I'm from Michigan. Naturally, I rooted for Detroit. They have all that history. And, you know, people like uniforms and colors, and they don't like change in the colors. And, of course, you see that a lot today. But, you know, I think it was a tough sell to sell sports in the Southeast. And it's amazing where it came from today, or where it came from back then to where it is today.
Absolutely, and that's a major point I make in the book. Pro sports in Atlanta had to compete with an already very strong local sporting culture, whether it was college football, whether it was golf, whether it was other outdoor activities, whether it was motorsports, whether it was professional wrestling. I mean, the Hawks had a problem playing Friday night games where they would frequently get outdrawn by pro wrestling across town, which had such a fervent fan base. So it was very difficult to come in and try to establish this in a market that in the same time all these other cities had developed a passion for pro sports, Atlanta had developed its own very distinctly Southern pro sporting culture, which continued to prove successful in spite of professional sports. Georgia Tech was very fearful about what impact it would have on their teams. Georgia Tech, even though their team in the 70s struggled for a while, continued to draw incredibly well in spite of it. And obviously the University of Georgia became one of the national powers in football under Vince Dooley. So there's been continued great local success for more localized sporting cultures in this time period. And as you said, there's also the issue of transplants. I spoke with so many people who talked about you go see the Braves play the Cubs or play the Cardinals or play the Mets, and there are always tons of local fans there. One weekend that kind of encapsulates all of this is in September 1969, when the Braves had won the division and played against the Mets in the National League Championship Series. The two games at Atlanta Stadium were only the fourth and fifth best drawing sporting events of that weekend in the region. The best drawing event was the Georgia home game. The second best event was the Georgia Tech home game. The third best drawing event was the Falcons game. And then two baseball playoff games, which drew more than 45,000 people each, were number four and number five. So you have to compete with this very strong local sporting culture. And those games in the NLCS had huge numbers of Mets fans who'd flown down to Atlanta to come and watch the game, fans cheering the whole time the Mets are winning those games. So it's a very difficult situation. It was a very difficult situation in which for those pro sports teams to compete.
Well, there's no doubt. You're listening to, Clayton Truter. He is the author of Loserville, How Professional Sports Remade Atlanta and How Atlanta Remade Professional Sports. And, Clayton, you know, there's a big game here tonight for the Atlanta Hawks. This is such a big game for the Hawks in Atlanta franchise history. The Hawks have never had an opportunity to clinch an NBA Finals berth at home, obviously, because they've never been to the Finals, and only once have they had an opportunity to clinch an Eastern Conference Final berth at home. This was way back on May 20th, 1988, versus the Boston Celtics, and they lost that game 102-100. So this is a huge night, and before you comment on that, first thing when I think of that is I go back to the Super Bowl when the Falcons were playing New England, and they brought up the history of championships in each city. And they showed all the championships Boston had, and they showed all the ones they had Atlanta had. And as you know, especially in the last 5 years, you know, this town has gotten to the big game. They just haven't gotten over the hump winning the big game. The Falcons obviously blowing the 28-3 lead in the Super Bowl with about 15 minutes to play or so. And then, of course, you know, the Atlanta the Atlanta Falcons last season blowing numerous amount of games where they had a 99% chance to win. The Bears, the Lions, the Cowboys. You know, this city has seen some really painful losses back to the 90s with the Braves in the World Series, especially 96 when, you know, the Yankees got down 2-0 and, they got pounded at home. And Joe Torre said, "No worry, Atlanta's my town. We'll win the next four." And, you know, miraculously they did. And, you know, AJC was saying the series was over, and I'm thinking, man, you people have just jinxed this ball club. Sure enough, it happened. You know, so there's been a lot of heartbreak in this town. But here's a chance to relive some of it, you know, to get rid of some of that heartbreak tonight versus the 76ers, who all of a sudden it became the Philadelphia Falcons, and it blew 18 and 25-point lead in back-to-back games. So let's see if the Atlanta Hawks or the Philadelphia Falcons or the Philadelphia 76ers will show up tonight.
I mean, one thing that strikes me about this series is just the emergence of Trae Young as being a national star. People who didn't see the Hawks regularly in the regular season the last couple of years are seeing what an incredible player he is. And I think he has an opportunity, if they finish this series out, to assert himself as one of the great athletes in the history of the city already at this point in his career. It's really remarkable what they've accomplished so quickly. One thing people forget about is how good the Hawks were when they got to Atlanta. That team coached by Richie Guerin was just such a physical, great rebounding, excellent defensive team, and reached the conference finals in both 69 and 70 in the Western Division. So Atlanta had a very good basketball team when they first got here, until 2015 when they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. They didn't make it again to the Eastern Conference Finals for 45 years. But, yeah, it's just fantastic to see Atlanta basketball back in a great position again.
Well, there's no doubt we got less than 3 minutes left in the show, Clayton. Thank you so much for coming on. You know, I see the prisoner of the moment from the local writers here saying this is, a top three victory in sports history, the comeback, in game five in Philadelphia, and they were down by 25. Ironically, they were down by 25, same amount of time left in the basketball game that the New England Patriots were down 25 and the same amount of time in a Super Bowl. Now, is that ironic or what? But, you know, the prisoner of the moment comment it is, Clayton, is that I don't think it's in the top three. I mean, obviously the 91, getting to the World Series, winning game seven against Pittsburgh, that was a great moment when Sid Bream slid safe in 92. That was another great moment. The Braves in 95 when they finally got over a hump against Cleveland, another city who hadn't won a championship in a long time till the Cavaliers won it. They got over hump there. The Falcons in their 1998 NFC Championship win way down in Minnesota, and an improbable win against a great 15-1 Vikings team. The Falcons were 14-2 that year, and they won it on the leg of Morton Anderson. That was a great win. And then when you go back to when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl, the second time when they pounded Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay at home, that was six wins right there for me that were better than that Hawks win. Your thoughts on that in the prisoner of the moment?
Well, I mean, to me, no matter how many championships Atlanta wins, I think Atlanta's premier sporting moment is going to be Hank Aaron's 715. I mean, I think that permanently establishes Atlanta's significance as a pro sports town, no matter how much they win, no matter how much they lose. There's an immortality to that in sports that any particular winning season is tough to compare to. And I think for many people around the country, when they think of Atlanta sports, that is the image that comes to mind for them.
We've got less than 30 seconds left in the show. I don't mean to cut you off, but that image when Hank Aaron hit it, he's rounding second base, and of course, you know, you had some racial strife going on. A white guy comes up and pats him on the back, and I'm sure his heart had to be beating 100 miles an hour. So that image is strong in my head. And also, getting the Olympics here in 96 was huge because you had the new ballpark at Turner Field. Clayton, thanks so much for coming on. I want you to come back on and talk about your other books some other time. We ran out of time to do that. Thank you. For Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, for Clayton up in Vermont, for Todd Quarter here in Atlanta, thank you for listening to ATL Prime Sports, and have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.